The following podcast is brought to you by the Media Studies and Communication Department at Dominican University of California. Lock your doors, check under the bed, and turn on a nightlight because it's about to get scary. I, DJ Ghost, will be your guide through all things paranormal. Listen at your own risk because when you listen, you won't be able to sleep tonight. You better keep one eye open. Welcome back to One Eye Open. I am your host, DJ Ghost, and I have something very fun for you today. We're going to be talking about scary movies that are based off true stories. There are nights when all we want to do is curl up in bed and watch a horror movie. We all love doing that. But what makes a scary movie scarier is knowing it is based on a true story. Knowing that somebody actually went through that terror in reality is something that does not let one sleep easily. Here are 26 horror movies based on true incidents that you absolutely need to see. Number 1. The Exorcist. The Exorcist is based on a book which is based on a real-life boy named Roland Doe, who was possessed by demons in 1949. In mid-1949, a number of newspapers reported an alleged possession and eventual exorcism of a boy known as Robbie or Roland Doe. Robbie grew up in a German Lutheran family, and after expressing an interest in Ouija boards, his spiritualist's aunt Harriet introduced him to one. It was after the death of his aunt that the family began experiencing seemingly paranormal activity in the house. This ranged from vibrations, strange noises, flying objects, and levitation. Blatty describes this as the first stage of classical possession, infestation, and uses this in his novel Before the Full Possession of Regan. The violence, guttural voice, and revulsion for sacred items displayed in by Regan is also inspired by descriptions of Robbie's possession. Elements of the Luden possessions of 1634 are also credited with inspiring Blatty's novel. In this case, a group of nuns claim possession after having erotic dreams about an attractive priest named Urbain Grandier. During the exorcisms, they convulsed, blasphemed, and made sexual motions towards the priest, similar to the infamous crucifix scene in The Exorcist. In a desperate attempt to clear his name, Grandier tried to exorcise the nuns himself, testing them by speaking in Greek, which is a sign of possession being understanding slash speaking languages previously known to the subject. However, they had been coached and responded by saying they made a pact not to speak Greek. Despite Grandier's best efforts, he was imprisoned and tortured. Some of the nuns in question even came to his defense towards the end of the trial. This was dismissed as a devil's work, and he was burned at the stake. Although the film version of The Exorcist evoked a negative reaction from religious groups, with many protesting outside cinemas, Blatty said that the true aim of this novel was to scare a generation into going back to church. The novel he calls an apostolic work sold 13 million copies in the U.S. alone, a great success he attributes to his divine intervention. As Bill Kenwright's production gets ready to launch to a West End audience this autumn, the world continues to be fascinated by spooky tales and things that go bump in the night. Why the human psyche seems to be drawn to such things is a job for psychologists, but it's interesting to think that a cult phenomenon that is exorcist was inspired by some 13th century nuns and a 12-year-old boy. Number 2, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. This movie is loosely based on America's famous serial killer, Ed Gein, who had 9 human skin masks in his possession at the time of his arrest. Despite being heavily touted as inspired by a true story, both Tobe Hooper's original 1974 film and the 2003 Marcus Nispel remake are only lightly based on the real-life murderer Ed Gein, who is suspected to have taken several victims between 1954 and 1957. Perhaps the most recognizable similarity is the film's house, whose gruesome content was similar to that found in Ed Gein's home in 1957. The real Ed Gein did wear a human scalp and face. The real Ed Gein did this, however, to help quell his desire to be a woman, not because of a skin disease known as Leatherface in the film. Also included in his uniform, Ed Gein wore a vest of skin complete with breasts and female genitalia strapped above his own. They added a lot of other elements into the movie to create a dramatic effect, but most of them did not happen in real life. Number 3, A Nightmare on Elm Street. The way Wes Craven describes it, he came up with the idea for A Nightmare on Elm Street after reading an LA Times article about a family that had survived the killing fields in Cambodia. They made it to the United States, but a young boy in the family still found himself haunted by terrible nightmares while he slept. Craven says he told his parents he was afraid that if he slept, the thing chasing him would get him, so he tried to stay awake for days at a time. When he finally fell asleep, his parents thought this crisis was over. They only heard screams in the middle of the night. By the time they got to him, he was dead. He died in the middle of a nightmare. Here was a youngster having a vision of horror that everyone older was denying. That became the central line of Nightmare on Elm Street. The origin of Freddy Krueger, that's awesome, and a far more psychologically chilling than the parental vendetta that led to the birth of the on-screen Krueger, which is also explained in greater detail in the Vulture oral history, burning the neighborhood child murder in the boiler room of the local school, Fishes. The 1980s were a different time, man. Number 4, A Child's Play. Cursed dolls are no stranger to the horror genre, and are often where some movie viewers draw the line when it comes to films they're featured in. The earliest creepy doll to be featured in a horror film dates back to 1929, and its echoes can be heard from Chucky to Annabelle. All seems to be fun and games until these hauntings reach into real-life nightmares. Robert the Doll's story originated in 1906 when he was gifted to a young boy named Robert Eugene Otto, who resided in Key West, Florida. The story surrounded young Otto's acquisition of a doll had varying myths. However, the young boy's love for Robert was undeniable and even carried on until his death. According to Atlas Obscura, Robert is Key West's most cursed object. Many myths and legends have circled around Robert and his connection to the beyond. Yet, Robert's story starts in Otto's family home. The family began to hear strange giggles and footsteps in the middle of the night, and those who passed the house claimed to see the doll moving in and out of the window frame. Traces of the Robert doll can be seen sprinkled throughout the first Child's Play film. Certain instances include the footsteps left in powder, the running through the walls, and Andy's whispered conversations before Chucky is truly revealed. Number 5, The Strangers. The terrifying 2008 home invasion horror film The Strangers was inspired by real-life violent crimes, including shocking and brutal murders. According to the Novus writer and director Brian Bortino, The Strangers is primarily based on 3 alternate true stories. The first is the infamous series of murders committed by the Manson family in 1969, later nicknamed Helter Skelter, which were organized by Charles Manson in an ill-convicted bid to start a race war the cult leader had predicted. In particular, the home invasion of killing actress Sharon Tate stands out as a clear marker for The Strangers' artist direction, with its gruesome knife violence drawing close parallels to the stabbing at the Tate home. The second true story inspiration was for The Strangers in the infamous 1981 Kevin Cabin murders. 4 people were killed in a small California town resorting to Sue Sharp, her son John, daughter Tina, and John's friend Stana. Disturbingly, the motive for those murders is still unknown, as the Katy Police Department never caught the real-life killers, and the case remains unsolved. Obvious similarities abound here, with 3 mass killers and The Strangers wandering off into the morning chill after massacring Kristen and James simply because they were home. The third and final slice of the real inspiration for The Strangers derives from Bertino's life experience. As a child, Bertino recalls a night his parents weren't home and someone knocked on their door asking for someone who didn't live there. In reverse of The Strangers, Bertino states he later learned that the people knocking were robbing houses in the neighborhood where no one was home instead of attacking people inside their houses. Still, the experience left an undeniable mark on Bertino that later morphed into the terrifying portrait of random rental violence that The Strangers movie endeavors to depict. Number 6. The Exorcism of Emily Rose. Though many might not know it, the horrifying events of the 2005 film The Exorcism of Emily Rose were not entirely fictional, but rather were based on the actual experience of a German girl named Anneliese Michael. Anneliese Michael grew up devoutly Catholic in Bavaria, West Germany in the 1960s, where she attended Mass twice a week. When Anneliese was 16, she suddenly blacked out of school and began walking around dazed. Though Anneliese did not remember the event, her friends and family said she was in a trance-like state. A year later, Anneliese Michael experienced a similar occurrence where she woke up in a trance and wet her bed. Her body also went through a series of convulsions, causing her body to shake uncontrollably. But what happened next was even more disturbing. After the second time, Anneliese visited a neurologist who had diagnosed her with temporal lobe epilepsy, a disorder that causes seizures, loss of memory, and experiencing visual and auditory hallucinations. Temporal lobe epilepsy can also cause Jeswin syndrome, a disorder marked by hyper-religiosity. After her diagnosis, Anneliese began taking medication for her epilepsy and enrolled in the University of Würzburg in 1973. However, the drugs she was given failed to help her, and as the year progressed, her condition began to deteriorate. Though she was still taking her medication, Anneliese began to believe that she was possessed by a demon and that she needed to find a solution outside of medicine. She began to face the devil wherever she went, and said she heard demons whispering in her ears. When she heard demons telling her that she was damned and would rot in hell while she was playing, she concluded that the devil must be possessing her. Anneliese sought out priests to help her with her demonic possession, but all the clergy approached, rejecting her request, saying that she should seek medical help and that they needed permission of a bishop anyway. At this point, Anneliese's delusions had become extreme. Believing she was possessed, she ripped the clothes off her body, compulsively performed about 400 squats a day, crawled on the table and barked like a dog for 2 days, and she also ate spiders and coal, bred the head off a dead bird, and licked her own urine from the floor. Finally, she and her mother found a priest, Ernst Alt, who believed in her possession. He stated that she did not look like an epileptic in later court documents. Over the next 10 months, following the bishop's approval of Annalise's exorcism, Al and Renz conducted 67 exorcisms lasting up to 4 hours on the young woman. Through these sessions, Annalise revealed that she believed she was possessed by 6 demons: Lucifer, Cain, Judas, Isaacroft, Adolf Hitler, Nero, and a disgraced priest. All these spirits would jostle for a power of Annalise's body and would communicate from her mouth with a loud growl. The demons argued with each other, with Hitler saying, "People are stupid as pigs. They think it's all over after death. It goes on." And Judas saying, "Hitler was nothing but a big mouth who had no real say in hell." Throughout these sessions, Annalise would frequently talk about dying to atone for the wayward youth of the day and the apostate priests of the modern church. She broke the bones and ripped the tendons off her knees from continually kneeling in prayer. Over these next 10 months, Annalise was frequently restrained so that the priest could conduct exorcism rites. She slowly stopped eating and eventually died of malnutrition and dehydration on July 1, 1976. She was just 23 years old. Number 7. The Watcher. In June 2014, before Derek and Maria Broaddus could even move into their home in Westville, New Jersey, the couple began receiving anonymous letters from someone called their Watcher. The letter was addressed to the new owners of 657 Boulevard, letting them know that the generations of the writer's family have watched over the home since the 1920s, and that they've been put in charge of waiting for its second coming. The Watcher also scolded the couple for starting renovations and threatened to kidnap their 3 children. After alerting the police about the letter, the Broadduses learned that the previous owners of the home also received an anonymous letter before they moved out. The note was written by someone who had said they'd been keeping a close eye on the house, but the couple had lived at 657 Boulevard for 23 years and had never received a letter before, so they assumed it was a prank and threw it out. The Broadduses kept receiving letters, and they got more and more creepy. They were now addressed by name, and they included several mentions of what is in the walls of the house. The Watcher also questions why they had yet to move in and was anxious for them to do so. "It has been years and years since the young blood ruled the hallways of the house. Have you found all the secrets it holds yet? Will the young blood play in the basement, or are they too afraid to go down there alone? I'd be very afraid if I were them. It is far away from the rest of the house. If you were upstairs, you would never hear them scream." Surprisingly, the Broadduses never moved in after receiving the letters referring to the children as young blood. They put the house back on the market after 6 months, but they were unable to find a buyer due to the creepy letters. Over the next few years, they continued to try and sell to no avail. They even explored the option of selling their home as a teardown, but they quickly drew the ire of the Westfield Planning Board and local community. After the contentious 4-hour planning board meeting in spring of 2016, the Broadduses found renters for the property, a brave family who did not mind the letters. However, shortly after the family moved in, a third Watcher letter arrived, and it was way more aggressive than the prior two. The writer complained about the media coverage of the letters and applauded their neighbors, my soldiers of the boulevard, for stopping the teardown attempt. They even straight up threatened revenge on the couple. Maybe a car accident, maybe a fire, maybe something as simple as a mild illness that never seems to go away but makes you fall sick day after day after day after day. Maybe the mysterious death of a pet, loved ones suddenly die, planes and cars and bicycle crash, bones break. In a genuine surprise, the renters did not move out, just asking the Broadduses to install more security cameras. Over the years, there have been several suspects for who the Watcher could be. The police thought it was someone in the neighborhood from the beginning, initially looking into the neighbor, Michael Langford, who had lived there since the 60s and seemed to inspire the show character Jasper Winslow. Another suspect was a man who played violent video games under the surname The Watcher. When they later discovered the DNA on the envelope was female, they looked into Michael's sister, Abby, a real estate agent, and even Maria Broadduses herself. The neighbors thought the Broadduses sent letters themselves trying to get out of the sale after realizing they couldn't afford the home. In another detail from the show that had a real-life mirror, Derek admitted to the New York magazine that he sent anonymous letters to his neighbors who had bashed on him in Facebook in 2017. Despite the years of investigations, the Watcher never identified as of 2018 when the magazine article was published, and they still haven't been caught today. And that is it for today. Learning about the numerous movies that we all love, having a disturbing background, actually scared me a little bit. Hope you have an amazing rest of your day. I'm your host, DJ Ghost, and remember to keep one eye open. See you next time.